Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast with my partner Brian Siegler. I'm Curtis Wilson. This episode is brought to you by Dr. George Lord Jeremy Counts at Main Street Pharmacy in Blacksburg. If you love this podcast, if you love the Hokies and the town of Blacksburg, make sure you are supporting Main Street Pharmacy when you make your way to town.
And again, guys, we got some stickers there at the pharmacy. Stop on by 301 South Main Street. Tell them Curtis Bryan sent you. Get yourself a sticker, and that'll make Jeremy real happy.
All right, Brian, how you doing tonight, man?
Man, I am tired, dude.
Oh yeah, you got nailed at work today. Usually Brian starts putting notes from all his game film in throughout the day on Tuesdays, and I went in there at 10 and one was in there. Went in there at 1 and nothing was in there, and when I went in there at 3 and nothing was in there, I messed him like, dude, are you alive? And you're like, I'm good.
I'm getting there. I got it in there. It was one of those days where I didn't anticipate it being a thing, but then it was a thing, so that kind of
threw me
off.
They ran fire blitz ads him all day. Just attack.
I didn't see it coming. Had my head down.
It's one of those things. We got in the background over here, over my left shoulder, some action. So if you've got betting lines, we have a tight game in the second quarter. What in the world happened to this game? This game was an 8 o'clock kick. How's it just in the second quarter?
What are they doing?
I don't know. It's 14-14 at that. It must have been like 100 passes. Anybody knows exactly what's going on in that game, please comment. I started the beginning of it, but so we'll have that in the background throughout the remainder of the show.
There you go.
All right, Brian. Well, let's get to it, man. A tough, tough, tough recap we got to go through here. We talked a couple times Saturday. We've obviously talked numerous times since then.
Yep.
The Hokies blow an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter and fall to Georgia Tech 28-27. And I have this literary classic I love. Piggy and Gerald. For anybody out there with kids, Piggy and Gerald are dope. Straight up. If you read those things with your kid, A, you're helping your kid, but B, they're also very funny. And I love the one where Piggy gets upset when Gerald breaks his toy. I am mad. I am sad. I am mad and sad. That is kind of what we've been for the last few days, Brian, with the result and all the shit out of this game.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it's one thing to lose in that fashion once. To have it happen back to back. So the week before, we're punching above our pay grade a little bit.
Yeah.
Despite them having a backup
freshman quarterback. Yeah.
And then, you know, this week we play down a little bit. In terms of overall talent. And we're at the point now where, you know, we are what our record is, regardless of what we're doing on the field.
2-7 all day long. We will not go to a bowl for the first time since 1992. If you count 2020, the team was bowl eligible. You can go into that story all day if they voted not to or the coaches voted not to or whatever. But it is what it is. And Brian, something we had not seen since ODU crept his head back in. And the offense turns the ball over 4 times during the game. And you – when I started talking about it, Brian pulls up the play sheet. Curtis, it's not just that we gave the ball away 4 times.
Oh, no. We didn't just give the ball away. We gave the ball away on the other team's side of the field – every time. Yeah. I mean, these are drive killing, point surrendering turnovers. We're not just talking about, you know, oh, we gave the ball away, or oh, we had a first down and then we gave the ball away. No, we are in at or on the doorstep of scoring every time we're giving the ball away.
3 of the 4 times. The first one was early. We fumbled at the Georgia Tech 22. And we know Will Ross all year had been making field goals from that range, but you're driving. And immediately you were like, 3 points. Just go ahead and book that, 3 points off the board. And that sort of, you know, it set the tone for the early first quarter because Georgia Tech jumps all up, gets up 10-0. And then for the next roughly three quarters, everything kind of went the Hokies' way. The Hokies would score 28 of the next, give my math right here, 28 of the next 34 points.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, because we went up, or 27, or 33, 27 of the next 33.
Yep.
27 of the next 33 points. And you roll into the fourth quarter, you got a lead. And, you know, let's talk about the fumble at the 10-yard line, because I made a note here to myself. I wanted to see, when we stopped them on that fourth down, and I'm listening to it. I don't get RSN, but I love Bill and Mike, so there's nothing better than to sit in a car or have the earbuds in and listen to them call the game. And we get that ball, and I'm like, be aggressive. Like, right, to me, right,
and
there.
And we were at the gate.
Well, the runs, I mean, we were running the ball consistently. But I was sitting there, and I'm like, you have them on the heels. They're probably expecting you to try to eat the clock. One shot. Just like one shot, get Caleb, rotate, get that safety to move over. When we didn't. But, you know, that's okay. We got down inside the 10-yard line, and then we fumbled the ball. And right there, if we don't fumble at all, it's a chip shot. And it's a 14-point lead in a game decided by a point where they only scored 14 in the last, you know, couple minutes there.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we had the momentum. We were pushing them. And, you know, I know it's not a garbage play. I know it was legitimate. We gash them. Georgia Tech's defensive tackle goes down with a shoulder injury, pulls the guys off the field for 2 to 3 minutes. We get back on the field. Very first play is the fumble.
And
so it's like as soon as we had the momentum taken away from us there for a second, the composure's lost, and then as soon as that fumble happened, it felt like, here we go again.
It's like that, the person that can't finish just takes the air out, and immediately they go on that big 90-yard drive, and it stunk. But I'll ask you this. Okay, so it comes out of that, we run the ball again. Are you okay with that? Because clearly you're at the 10-yard line. I push for it again, aggressiveness. To me, I think right there, don't you feel like they're just going to key in on the run?
It does. So I have no problem with it because it's a first down run.
Okay.
And he would have gotten 6 yards.
Oh, yeah. He
would get 4 to 6 yards on that run.
And you're down even closer to the goal line.
You just got to hold the ball. I mean, it's situational. You got to know ball protection trumps everything
that at this
stage in the game.
Well, and then obviously, you know, they go and score, cut it to a 5-point lead at that point in time.
Yep.
Yeah, 5-point lead. And then we're driving again. We're on their side of the field, and Grant Wells throws an interception. They subsequently take that one, would take it down, and that would be them with the go-ahead touchdown. And once again, you're right on the doorstep of field goal range. There's so many different things. And this team continuously just shoots its foot off every week in some way, shape, or form. And as a fan, it's disheartening. I mean, the only upside I continue to hear is at least it's not – and I know some people will laugh and say, at least I don't have to hear about execution all the time. At least I hear Brent Pry say, it's on me as a coach to make this right, versus, because there was nothing more infuriating last 3 years, especially 4 years. Well, it's the execution of the game when you're like,
we know you got to execute. I mean,
but what are you doing?
And there, so, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, obviously some of this is on the players, and we had that discussion last week.
And we continue to
And we'll talk about it again a little bit this week. You know, what's on the players, what's on the coaches, what's on kind of a shared responsibility. But yeah, at least we're getting the right things after the fact. I think the fan base in general is just kind of
– we're apathetic.
We haven't gotten a win in so long. It kind of is what it is at this point.
Last time we got a win, it was 87 degrees outside and still humidity in the air. And now we're sitting this weekend, it's going to be, what, 60s? 60s, beautiful fall weather down in Durham, as we talk about Know the Enemy later. Couple other things. Obviously, something we missed a 40-yard field goal because of a bad snap, which yep. sucks, because when it's a one-point game, you start counting up all the points, right, Brian? It's like 3 + 3 + 3, there's 9. It's a touchdown win. You don't fumble the ball, you punch it in, you beat them by 10. And that's where one thing is.
Again, if you score the touchdown when you're inside the 10, the game is over.
The game is over because they're going to be pressing. We'll talk about Tucker Howland in a while. Hell of a return late in the game. We're almost at midfield. And with 50 seconds left in college football, 2 first downs get you to field goal range, stops the clock, gives you time probably to kick a field goal. And Groutwell fumbles the ball, his 3rd turnover of the day. And that just seems what it was, right? Great opportunities, every single one squandered.
Yeah.
And as much as we can talk about the missed opportunities, I still feel like I look at this game. We played a bad defense, and somehow we only got just a little over 300 yards. We only scored 13 points. That is
And some of this is, again, when you look at it, the missed opportunities.
True. Like 1,000%.
The points, you wouldn't have a big gripe about the points that the offense scored if they had finished the drives that they got into scoring range.
Because it would have been over 20.
You'd at least be plus 9.
Yeah.
If you just execute in the red area or just outside the red area.
Very true. Very, very
minimum
true.
Minimum plus 9.
Minimum plus 22. But that's not the way it goes. Now, we did hit that 3.5 number you talked about, so we did effectively run the ball. Grant Wells ran the ball a lot, but so did Keyshawn.
Probably
Key.
More than I would have liked to. I would have liked. I mean, as effective as King was for most of the game, he could have easily given me at least 5 more carries, and that probably puts him just north of 100.
Yeah. Other sad stat on Saturday was just converting 33% on 3rd down. I mean,
yeah,
it's the only upside was we got, you mentioned it to me, we would get a couple 1st downs, then we would go to 3rd down and not get it. So maybe again, the silver linings we keep talking about, well, at least this against a bad defense, we actually didn't just go 3 and out all the time. We moved the ball occasionally. But again, that's not good enough against it's competition right now. The competition is not good, and it struggles. It struggles with things.
It's just odd. I mean, I know we had big plays against NC State that made that look probably better offensively than score-wise than it did in terms of execution drive by drive.
Yeah.
This one, we were a little bit better drive by drive, but when we weren't moving it into scoring range, we weren't moving it at all.
Yeah. So is that So is that a couple of your bright spots?
Offense? Yeah. I mean, I think when you look at bright spots, more sustained drives this week, and again, probably the best rushing game since Pitt. That's 2 things positive that you can glean from this effort.
All right. I mean, okay. I mean, but then, you know, back more false start penalties, 4. So how many does that make in the last 2 weeks?
More than we should ever have.
Ever. Four should be a max in a game because it should be getting. I mean,
four is an improvement.
Well, yeah, but good Lord, we set the standard absolutely atrocious when you have 10. I think I've hit the wall this week because I can't find bright spots this week. I can't. I look at it and I can't find any bright spots. I'm almost crusty. You know,
I do.
You remember that? Remember the old? I got nothing. Dip. So nothing. I can't.
Zilch. Nada.
Zilch. Nada. I have nothing anymore for the offense because I think it's 120 now total. We're significantly lower. I want to say like 108 scoring. It's nothing there. And I think it's more of the frustrating points of you give me a little bit and then it just looks bad. Give me a little bit, it looks bad. Like, be consistent. Could you just be bad one game? I mean, just be atrocious one game, kick a field goal, get nothing else. At least I can say, well, at least we're just bad versus, you know, for the second and third quarters, you know, we were okay. But that is what it is.
Yeah.
Let's flip over to
we put another two quarters together this time instead of just the one.
There you go. All right, let's flip over to defense. And I think this was the worst game of the season. What about you?
Considering the quality of opponent, the yards and points surrendered, I'd say that's probably the worst overall effort from the defense this year.
Yeah, and in case you didn't look at the stat lines, we gave up over 200 rushing, over 250 passing to Pyron, the man that Brian said if Sims didn't go, we should see, and we did see him, and he's a freshman, of course. But it's more of just the averages, right? I'm an averages person. I look at averages a ton because where you net from averages kind of indicates your performance. And for us that week, this is an offense that was barely putting up 300 yards. They put up 450. This was an offense that was barely getting 16 points a game, and they put up 28.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what gets me. Is I look at the average. If it's a 10 to 15% increase, whether scoring or yards, that's fine because weird things happen in games. But when it's that much, and I mean it's legitimately a 50% increase across all lines, that's just uncalled for, and it just says, you know, what was going on with the defense on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, you look at the tape. I mean, it was really a bad opening quarter and a bad fourth quarter. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of yards surrendered in the middle there. They had a couple drives that got at or near the 50, but for the most part, it was a good second and third quarter. It was just really, really bad kind of on the bookends there.
And those drives weren't like 60-yard drives. They were 90s and 75. They were big drives.
Yeah.
They were big drives.
I mean, you take away the drive that where they got three to close the half. I mean, they really did a pretty good job in the second and third quarter.
Yeah. And I'll say this. Of all the times this year, I've been upset at a lot of things. I think this is the first time I've been upset with prize play calls. Because on that third and 19, after they sack Pyron and they're in his face, and say what you will, he didn't know what the hell to do. He did not know what to do with 5 and 6 coming after him. We take a timeout, and we run a two-man under. Thank you, Brian, for that information. Three-man rush. We spy versus attacking. It makes no sense. Because if you attack, at least that ball has to come out really quick. Where he got, if you count, it was about he got 3 seconds when McCullum came across. Three seconds. Where if you've been blitzing six, he had a second and a half. And that Mansoor has still been in McCollum's hip pocket. I don't get that play call. And it's the first time I was really like, what are you doing? We saw the script at NC State. We saw the script with down and distance at NC State, and the same thing happened.
So when you look at it too, by being able to hold it that long, he was able to let the receiver kind of use the referee as a pick.
Yep.
So Delaney had to go over the top of the ref, gave up probably another few yards of cushion there. Uh-huh. And now, you know, you're talking about instead of him getting there and probably it being fourth and four or five, you know, you get the first down.
It's true.
And if it's fourth and four or five, number one, you got a better chance of getting the stop on fourth if they go for it. Number two, they might punt. They had been conservative with the punt all game. They might would have punted from that position. So,
very, very true. They may or they may not have at that point. But we'll never know, right? We'll never know because, to me, we ran the wrong coverage.
So for what they did, I mean, it was the perfect play against the defense that was called. It just was. I mean, they got into the right play. I don't know whether that was the play they had before they called the timeout or not.
Yeah.
But they got into the right call for the defense that we were in.
Yep. All right. Now, there were a true, you know, as mad as I am and as crusty as I want to be, there were two young guys who absolutely flashed. And obviously, let's talk about the first, Tucker Holloway in the punt return game. Holy crap, did he blow up. You know, he goes in, he breaks the Virginia Tech all-time record. And it's like you sit here and you think about everybody that did it, right, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some – I mean, we're not like Miami in terms of elite punt returners, but we're up there. We're up there.
But we are not garbage, and it's like, you know, he goes up there, and he obviously the 90-yard house call, which was just a beautiful way of setting up him finding the lanes, moving, and then turning his jets. But 188 yards, he averaged 27, and it was every time. And then, you know, he got a chance, you know, late in the
game. He gave us a chance to get – In field goal range to win the game.
He did.
And that's so, on top of already scoring a touchdown.
On top of scoring a touchdown, on top of flipping the field on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
And now it's the question of, and we'll talk about it, we're gonna kind of cut the recap a little short because with three games left, we got some things we want to talk about tonight. But we'll talk about him in the potential red shirt in a few minutes here. The other young guy, the Kalai loss, oh my God, he jumped the shit out of that route. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah. Jumped it and had the wherewithal to secure it and take it to the end zone, too. So,
I mean, he's flashing more and more.
And he struggled in the first quarter, and then he turned it on the rest from of the there game. On out. Yeah. He had a really good rest of that game.
Rest of the game, I mean, and that's great.
So seeing
that's
young great. Guys flash like that, I mean, that at least gives you hope of things to come. But, you know, like I said, it's difficult trying to pick out the silver linings here with so many straight losses and two back-to-back in devastating fashion.
Yep. Well, let's talk about this, Brian. You know, someone we know in a tweet that he made on Saturday afternoon, Don V, the response was someone out there put out, Fuente would have this team at least 4-4 or at least 5-4, something like that. And Don made the comment, the person who made that, you're absolutely right. He's right. But it goes back to the car analogy. And that is a car can be beat to shit where you got to fuck with the ignition, got to give it some gas. You don't take off too fast at the stoplights. So, yes, the owner of that car knows how to drive it. But if he gave it to you or me, we wouldn't be able to get 5 inches. And I love that. I love Don V's analogy there because, yeah, I think we would be 4 or 5 wins with Justin Fuente at the helm right now because he knew how to run this car.
Yep.
And I sit here and I think a lot of people are still very bullish on Brent Pry. I know some people are saying, oh, this doesn't look good. This doesn't look good. But it ain't like we're far. It's not like every game is a 3-touchdown loss, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're not out there getting smoked. We're out there still competing. We're just doing a whole lot wrong to stop the any progress that we could make in this in towards winning more games. And we're seeing that happen consistently. It's the, you know, one step up, two steps back. It's shoot yourself in the foot. There's True. So much that, like I said, when you find the silver linings, they're there, but it's hard to feel the silver lining when you're in the midst of losing so many games in a row.
Absolutely. By the way, I just got a message here. The Know the Enemy. This is from Faust, somebody we communicate with on Twitter a lot. The Know the Enemy should be the Hokies this week because we were going to royally screw ourselves in some way this week against Duke. That was very cool to see. Yep, Bryant Cobb, the all those guys from 2023 with that video, even after the loss, was very cool to see that.
And we still had a bunch of recruits on the sideline. You know, got a preferred walk-on commit to close out the weekend. So, I mean, there were some positives in terms of long-term to kind of take away from everything. But, again, it's hard to feel that when you're in the when you're in the thick of things.
That's very true. So let's flip it, Brian, because normally we'd still be talking more data points, plays, and all that stuff. But we're gonna sit here and let's talk about what we want to see the last 3 weeks. And what we want to see now. The one thing that I listened to the presser today on Good Evening, LeVar. As always, we appreciate you joining us. I listen literally to so many interviews on time and a half now, and every podcast is on at least time and a quarter. Got to get it in there. But a thing that Brent Pry mentioned, and I want to ask you if this is something you guys did potentially back 20 years ago, was he's been mentioning they've been doing developmental scrimmages, about 20 plays every Sunday of guys who are not playing at all. What are your thoughts on that? And is that something you've seen in the past?
We didn't see that a lot at Hampden Sydney. So that's something kind of new in my realm, but it kind of makes sense for two reasons. Number one, you look at the overall talent in this roster, add to that some of the veteran leadership that is departing this roster at the end of the season. So when you look at that, we're going to need as many young guys are stepping up this year, we're going to need just as many stepping up next year.
Absolutely.
And some of these guys are full on Coach Pry guys. And some of these guys are still learning the ropes and still guys that were recruited by Justin Fuente. So I think some of that is, hey, we're going to need you next year. I think some of this is a way to get guys acclimated and say, hey, you're going to be a part of what we're doing next year. Try to deter some of the portal jumpers and things like that as we kind of close out the year.
Got it. All right. Sounds good. Well, let's jump and let's talk next 3 weeks what we want to see on offense. And it's quarterback. I just do this, Brian, because I don't know what the hell we should do. What do you think?
I think you're at a crossroads because – I think we've seen we know what we're getting from Wells, and I think a lot of this depends on where the coaches are in the process. If the coaches think that Wells is going to need to be one way or the other, kind of the answer the next 2 years, God help us. But at the same time, that you don't pull a guy if he's going to be your guy the next 2 years. Now, if you're out, or if you want a full on, you know, whether you bring in a transfer, whether you work with some of the young guys, if you're going to have a full on open competition again next year, then it's time to play somebody else. The only threat of that is that if the team perceives Wells as the best opportunity to win games, does that lose your locker room in the short term with a coach saying, hey, we're building for the future, these last three games or these last three games? So does that's kind of what I think a coach has to weigh when you start throwing in young guys just for the reps or just to see what you got. I think that that's the risk that you run, is that you might lose the locker room, especially for some of the veterans or some of the guys that are, you know, still have some eligibility left, but, you know, are a little bit higher up in terms of their time in Blacksburg.
Yeah. I mean, and Pratt mentioned, like, you want to respect your seniors, but you also kind of know you've got to let some of these young guys see the field, feel that live game action. And as far as quarterback, you know, if you say he's the guy the next 2 years, then okay, you bet they're going to have to nail at least two starting offensive linemen.
You're going to have to keep at least one wide receiver.
Three. You've got to get two proven guys. Running back, it's fine. It's just you've got to find a way to keep Malachi. And actually, let's flip to that. Running back room. Malachi's doubtful again this week. I think right now, if you're Brent Pry and you're that staff, you just look at Malachi and say, you're clearly injured again. We're shutting you down. We're going into more of a slow rehab to get you ready for winter workouts and spring ball next year.
At this point, doesn't help us.
Nothing. And it doesn't help him. It doesn't help him. Does it honestly help Malachi Thomas coming off of an injury and showing what he's got?
He's shown lead back potential. He's going to be the lead back next year. So
yes, he will.
And he needs to get another offseason in this strength and conditioning program, go into spring and fall fully healthy, and be ready to contribute.
Yeah. And the other thing is, as far as he goes, he's already shown that with a significant injury, he can bounce back and immediately be ready to play.
Yeah.
When he stepped on that field after he had been out with the leg injury, he immediately showed he could play. So I think, like, we know you can do this. Let's be smart about it. So I do think the next couple weeks, even though I think he got banged near the end of the game, you're looking at King as your lead back. And obviously Duke and Black have been getting their chances, continue to give them their chances. They have been playing special teams. And I think maybe, you know, you give somebody like Kenji Christian some potential run during the game, because he's already redshirted. He hasn't played any this year. It's one of those, maybe you carve out a series, you say, if we get to this score, you're in. I don't know. I think, again, I want to see guys, what they do on the field, kind of like we've seen Bryce Duke. We've seen Bryce Duke be decisive in his runs. We've seen him be able to catch passes and assist in special teams. We don't know his ceiling, but right now I think me and you can comfortably say with Bryce Duke, he has a contributor potential next year.
Yeah.
Same with Chance Black. Chance Black's shown that he can help on special teams. I think he's learning his way around as a running back. But again, contributor in some way. We don't know Christian if he is where he is yet. And I think that's what I would like to find out about him.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially on Duke. I think we need to get him as much of a role in the next three games as we can. What Black does, whether it's heavier or lighter than what he's been doing the whole year, it is what it is. He's already had a red shirt year. I think he's ready to, you know, stay in that contributor role. So, and when we look at Christian, you know, he's the one that we don't really know a whole lot about.
No.
You know, he slid kind of up and down the depth chart in spring and fall. So I don't really know what to make of what his role will be with this team going into the offseason. If you can get him some time to where he can maybe show out, then maybe at least we'll kind of know where he stands there.
All right. What do you think about the wide receiver tight end room?
I mean, at this point, outside of Caleb, you might as well go full youth movement. Give me more Gosnell. Give me more Moss. Give me more Jones. Let's see Holloway line up at wideout.
We're gonna start arguments again. because he was already advised he's playing this week. If he plays this week, that's four. Until you do not get him the last 2 weeks. I am on the train of you try him at wide receiver just to get in the reps, just to see it.
Well, I think he's shown obvious special teams. He's dynamic, right?
Upper echelon special team.
Yeah, he's dynamic on special teams. And that's an area that we have struggled mightily with all year. So he immediately gives you a boost in that area. So I say let's get him some more reps at wideout, see if he can give us a boost in those areas as well. I say if that means burning the red shirt, then burn the red shirt.
Burn the red shirt. Some people are saying don't burn the red shirt. We might need him much later in his career.
My point is if it's year five of Tucker Holloway's career and Brent Pry's tenure, and we need Tucker Holloway in order to have a competitive wide receiver room, we've got bigger problems than a burnt red shirt.
All right, let's talk about this. I think the other guys, they've already burned them. Just let them play, let them rip, especially if you're potentially saying – see, I think starting Wells, he still could be in a battle next year. You're just saying you want to rep him with guys who are here and give you the best chance for those guys to succeed and potentially not lose the locker room. Tight end room, I think Harrison St. Germain was used very early. We have not seen him since West Virginia. They're clearly redshirting him. But what do you think about – I think I know where you're going to go with this, but what Daquan Wright?
As many reps as possible. As many snaps as possible.
All right, so is he completely taking the Drake role?
I think he fully takes the Drake role and whatever hybrid role we've got for Connor. I think he – occasionally we'll take some of the snaps that you would give to Gallo, you give it to Wright.
All right, because his red shirt's burned. That was his fifth game last week against Georgia Tech where he got zero targets, but he played.
One target, zero receptions.
One target. Excuse me.
He had double coverage on him, and he got a target. That was his only target.
All right, so Brian's basically saying get Daquan Wright absolutely fully prepared for his roles next year of doing everything. So got it. Let's flip to the offensive line. The big one that I had on here that kind of got kiboshed today while I listened to the press conference, and that's unfortunate, was I was like, let Braylon Moore outsnap Jesse Hansen. Brent Pry comes up. Nope, they are preserving his red shirt. But why do you think that is? I mean, he clearly offers, in the run game especially, he offers a hell of a lot more than Hansen. I know you said it. You said it to me. You said it on here. He's learning how to pass pro. But why hold it? Why not just let him play and learn more?
Because I think if we need any area for long-term depth, it's offensive line. And if we think we have a multi-year starter in Braylon Moore, then I think that's the right move here, especially if in the short term he's not giving you a significant boost over Jesse. Obviously, he's not – there are areas where he is deficient or we would see him in the game full-time right now, right? He wouldn't just be a guy that's in there on certain packages or certain series. He'd be a full-time player right now. So there's obviously a reason that Jesse Hansen's still in there. Give Moore another year of development. I'm taking the opposite point of view here because there's not a significant boost in that area, right? At least in the short term.
I know in the short term, yeah. I just to me, I'm one that would say I see him run block, and he's an 85 in run block. Jesse's a 75. He's like a 60 in pass pro. Jesse's a 75. So they even out, but Jesse's average in both where he's a D in the pass pro. So I get what you're saying there. What about at center?
I think we got to get Holyfield in there at some point just to see what we have, whether that's in – yeah, it's hard right now because you still want to try to win games. There's There's no honor in just getting guys in there to get guys in there. You're still trying to win the game. So you can only do so much when it comes to center, because that is kind of the brain of the offensive line. So that's probably the one position, not only just because I have no idea what I have in Jack, but also because I know at least bottom line what I'm going to get out of Johnny every game. It's a little bit harder, but I'd like to see them get at least maybe a handful of series for him in the next three games.
Well, see, the thing I'm more worried about than anything is the next year, and Johnny Jordan's not coming back. He's fully exhausted everything, and you're going in with your – somebody just scored a touchdown behind me. I don't know who it was.
They did.
Look that up. Nice run there. That Johnny's not coming back next year. And right now, your three potential centers are Jack Hollyfield, who will be a redshirt sophomore, Hunter, who will be a redshirt freshman, or Johnny Dixon, who will be a redshirt freshman. To me, it's – you talk about a handful of series – I would say I'd be comfortable because Jack's already burned his red shirt. He's at least been playing a ton on special teams, so he's at least seeing game action. But I'd say I would like to say 12 series by the end of the season. Just because if he struggles out there snapping the ball, or like, okay, do we need to go portal shopping while we get Jack acclimated next year?
I think we're going portal shopping for a center regardless, so I think your point might be moot.
Okay.
Obviously, we still got to land that center.
Yes.
But, you know, that's kind of my thought there. But, yeah, it'd be good to know at least what you have to a point. I just don't know. I don't foresee us being out of any of these remaining games, even though I think we – potentially could lose all three of them. We could potentially win all three of them, but I don't see us being blown out in any of these games.
I got you.
So I don't know if you'll have an opportunity where you feel comfortable as an offense saying, hey, let's just throw redshirt freshman in its center and see what we got here.
Especially
down three in the fourth quarter.
True. All right, so what about kind of the rest of the young guys? You know, I mentioned Dixon and McLean, Meadows, Chaplin. Do you think they all get – is that a little easier than center to give them some run?
It's easier because, number one, I think we've seen other areas struggle more, and I think we kind of know what we can get from these other guys a little bit more at this point. We've seen Meadows in a game already, game or two, actually, I think. We've seen, you know, some of the other guys. I'd like to see Chaplin because I feel like Chaplin could, you know, give us a little something there. We saw Parker slide over to left tackle some this past week. Whether Chaplin works in at left or right and Parker slides over just to give a different look there, I don't know. I know it sounds suicidal, moving a struggling tackle over to left instead of right, but we haven't been able to hide him at right. We might as well see what he can do at left.
At least you can put somebody on left, right? I mean, something to be done there. All right, let's flip over to defense, Brian, and let's start out in the secondary because it has been one of the brighter spots. With Strong out again, I think Strong's getting a red shirt. I think they've already had the conversation with him. And I think it's one of those again, so much of what's going on and who we're seeing is, you know, Braylon Moore can play to a level.
Yep.
We know Dorian Strong and Malachi can play to levels. And Dorian, in this case, a lot stronger. It's almost just like, dude, get healthy. You going out here does nothing for you in the long run. In the long run, it does nothing for you. You're going to be a redshirt junior next year. It'll be your fourth year. If you have a breakout year, you lose nothing. You move on if you have a great year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. Definitely redshirt him. I think we've looked at Cam Johnson now. He's gotten in for two games. Pick another two that he can get some run when he's healthy.
Last two. I think you give him this week to – get fully healed.
Yeah, I'm with that. So, and then you get Devin Alvis in there. He's been mentioned. Give him some run. You know, you got these guys that are showing they can contribute early. You know, give them the opportunities to contribute early. And when we flip over to linebackers, I mean, Tisdale still has a COVID year. Does he decide to come back next year?
I hope so.
I think that's kind of where we're looking at. Because he's shown that probably of everybody that's currently on the roster, the best ability at will.
Yes, 100%.
And obviously it took half a season to get there between everything he was dealing with the eligibility thing. So, you know, you hate to see that because that's probably the area on defense that we struggled to find consistency throughout the first half of the season.
100%.
And we were mixing and matching between young guys, you know,
yeah,
guys that had been on the roster that hadn't seen a lot of time, things like that. So we finally got some consistency once Tisdale was back.
Yep. Let me ask this, because I think Tisdale comes back. Any chance Tisdale moves to Mike?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. I ask you because
I think what's more than likely, if Tisdale comes back, Keller definitely moves to Mike.
Okay. Okay. All right. So I was going to say in here, let Johnson and Keller and McDonald all get some run too. So obviously, if that's your feel, I still think you give them some run just to give them the more PT. But what do we do without it, Sam? We've seen all three guys can play it. They each have various attributes they bring to the position. I mean, do you try to leverage them somewhere else, or is it going to be one of those things? Somebody, you hate to say it, but is there going to be maybe a conversation where somebody is out the door come December because, you know, eventually, to me, they've all been getting similar reps, and you know,
if not next year, definitely by the year after that, that's Lawson's job.
Yeah.
So we'll say that. And obviously, Jenkins has shown he can play it at a high level as well. Walker has shown, depending on matchups, he does pretty good as well. So, you know, right now, if there's an odd man out, I'd say it's probably Walker, because I think Jenkins can hold it down until Lawson's ready to take it over full time.
Okay. All right. Good deal, man. Let's flip next last before we close this out and then go to one other piece. Defensive line, it's really tough because a lot of the younger guys are already playing. Likely everybody but Garbutt returns. And I think the bigger piece is if everybody's back but Garbutt, there's really not really much snaps to go around. You're going to let Garbutt play, I think, just because Garbutt's the best player we have on the line. But
he's playing at such a high level. I mean, you're going to get him the amount of snaps he needs to get. Whatever he can go, he's going to go.
But there's no – but I look at the defensive line throughout the year, and you can tell me your opinion. There has not been any absolute – with the exception of West Virginia where we got pushed around, there's not been, like, atrocious line play. At times it's been really good. And most times it's been average, slightly above, where you're like they're developing. You know, we Mario Kendricks has come on strong lately. Panay's continued to develop. You know, we've seen Nelson and McCray have moments. Like, that's the one I can't find.
The only thing I'll say is that we haven't had a lot of success getting consistent pressure with just four.
That's true.
That would be my only big critique of the unit. I think overall, especially in the run game, they've held up pretty well.
All right. Let's flip now and just talk about some off-season moves we'd like to see. I think the first is obvious. We've put a number on here of at least a minimum of 8 now. I still think the 12 to 15 that we've mentioned a couple times should be it, but a minimum of 8 to start backfilling, if not more, in the portal.
I'd like to see us hit at least double digits, but 8 is the absolute minimum that I feel
we get less than 8. I think me and you start.
If we're less than eight, I'm worried about next year.
Significantly worried, and when we say worry, we're not talking scrapping to get 6-6, scrapping to get 3 or 4. All right, let me ask this, and this kind of goes on for the end of this year too. The last three games, should Brent Pry go ahead and give the reins of the defense to Chris Marv to start that better focus on the head coach? The last three games, because you have your opportunities right now, and it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter except for the development of Chris Marv.
I think this goes back to the locker room discussion, right? So,
okay, yeah.
Are we essentially, it depends on if you're treating these next three games as we're trying to win these games, or if you're treating these next three games as developmental games. And if you're treating them as developmental games, have you had the right type of conversations with your players where they're on board with that? Because that's going to matter. Because it's, again, I know guys that are seniors or guys that you know are moving on, you don't really, you want to honor them at the same time, but you know, this is their last ride. What you don't want to do is lose guys that are the juniors and sophomores on this team and send a message to them that you're not doing things you feel like you need to do to win. That you're looking too much forward.
Well, then let me ask this. Do you bring somebody prize for me with like Bob Shoup and almost have him as a secondary mentor? I know Bud's in the building, but Bud's – okay, he's there sometimes, but obviously he's got a role as an ambassador, which is a little different. He's not there just grinding film away all hours of the night.
Yeah, he's not an analyst.
Yeah, do you bring somebody like Bob Shoup in, who worked with Brent Pry, who coached Chris Marv, to sort of be that mentor constantly with him next year? And then the same thing, do you bring somebody in for Bowen?
I think that'd be a great move. I think you definitely bring in a seasoned veteran analyst for Marv next year, regardless. You bring in a seasoned veteran analyst for Bowen next year, regardless.
Ralph Regan, his coach. One of the best, say what you want to say, one of the best offensive coaches in college football the last 30 years, with the talent that he had and how he was able to make them produce. I mean, he's 75. He helped at Rutgers last year. I mean, I think the biggest thing we're just leading to in this conversation is there's going to be some special assistance specifically next year. Could it be for each of the young guys on that? Could Brent Pry essentially bring himself someone, a known head coach in to be with him? And I sit here and I look at Texas – and they've got Gary Patterson on the sideline. I don't know if Gary wants to get back in the game or not. Because I feel like a lot of these guys who are football junkies, those analyst roles they just love, right? It's like, I don't have to worry about the media. I don't have to really worry about the players or recruiting. You know what I get to do? I get to break down film. I get to scheme.
Yeah.
Is that something – and a guy like Patterson, who was very big and still had a hand in his defense – as every year went on, you know, is it one of these things of how you control that? It's going to be interesting. I think what scares us more is if come March, maybe not March, summertime, there's not any of these roles and we're just rolling at it again, especially after going, not going to a bowl. All right, Brian, let's roll over some other Hokies news and college football notes. Basketball season has begun, and last night both Hokie men's and women's hoop tipped off at Castle. Hokies men played Delaware State in an easy 95-57 win. Grant Basile led the way with good games from Padula and Maddox. Be dead honest with you, Brian, didn't watch a minute, followed it, and it didn't take long for the team to get up like 20, and it was just like, yeah, this is over.
That was a whipping. And it was good to see them be that crisp out the gate.
Yeah, regardless of competition.
I think And I think we kind of knew it coming into this year. I think we're going to maybe take a small step back overall defensively, but this is a much more potent offensive team.
No. So we'll see. I know they've got more games this week, and it's kind of that balance. Try to watch some, try not to watch some. Let's talk about Women's Hoops as well, who are ranked 13th in the country. Absolutely blows the doors off Mount St. Mary's, 101-45. I looked at that in the first quarter, and it was 23-5 at the end of the first, and the same thing went through my head. Well, that game's over. But a great showing, you know, by both teams last night to get the season started. Obviously, some bigger games in the subsequent weeks, in which we'll be kind of keeping an eye on a little bit closer.
Yep.
Also in news, women's soccer makes the tournament. They'll be playing West Virginia, who's a national number 7 seed, this weekend. So, again, good things there. Obviously, they pulled that upset of UVA earlier this year. So, again, good for them, good for the program. It's just building more and more.
Yep, big stuff happening in the fall for that soccer team. So, that's been big. And yep, now that we have basketball back, it's just going to be even more – fun stuff to watch day in, day out throughout the week.
Absolutely. All right, let's flip it real quick before we head to break here. College football playoff rankings are released again tonight. Your top four are Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan. TCU makes a big jump into the top four. Tennessee 5, Oregon 6, and LSU as a 2-loss team jumps all the way up to 7. How are you feeling about this thus far, Brian?
We talked yesterday. This is exactly what I thought was kind of going to happen, more or less. I said LSU could potentially go as high as 6.
They're at 7.
I didn't think Tennessee was going to fall any further than 6. So that 6 was kind of my buffer there. TCU jumping.
Big,
yeah. They were 8. That's probably the most surprising, but it doesn't necessarily shock me.
Nah. They're 9-0.
They're putting together a good resume, so I mean, it doesn't shock me. And you know, Michigan is kind of the, you know, that's all going to come down to what happens when they play Ohio State.
Yeah, you Thanksgiving. Know, one of the
that's an elimination game.
It is an elimination game, and it's also one of the reasons I think in the very near future the Big Ten is going to scrap divisions, just like everybody else is, because there's no like. Because if you have that game and they're both – one's 12-1 and then the other's 13-0 and they're playing 10-3 across conference, like, no, rematch this next week in Indy.
Well, as bad as the Coastal is, the Big Ten West might be worse this year.
Not a lie. By the way, did you watch the end of the LSU-Alabama game?
Yes, I did.
I am not the biggest Brian Kelly fan, but that was balls. That was absolute ball, because he just basically said, this is it.
Yeah.
The game's going to end right here on one play. And I love that. Even though I may not.
He said, we're not doing this again. Let's go ahead. We're going to end this thing.
And they knock off Alabama, who some pundits are still, well, you know, they have a chance to get in. They lost 2 games. Can we? And that's why I don't like LSU at 2. They've been proven they can beat twice, and LSU has lost 2 times on essentially their home field. That's a little
one family. Was a neutral site.
Oh, New Orleans is really neutral for Baton Rouge.
Absolutely. No, I'm just kidding.
Lord have mercy. All right, Brian, before we get into Know the Enemy Duke, we are going to take a quick pause for a message from our digital partners.
As we take a quick break, we'd like to tell you about getting your free website report from our digital partner, Grassroots Digital Marketing Studio. They'll tell you how your website ranks on Google, on-site SEO, and social media. No commitment to buy anything. You can get your free report by visiting grassrootsdigitalstudio.com/free-website-report. Now back to the episode.
All right, Brian. Well, let's get into Know the Enemy. And with the Duke Blue Devils, who come in at 6-3 under Mike Elko, let's talk about the quarterback. Let's talk about Riley Leonard, who is a composite 3-star coming out of Fairhope, Alabama in the class of 2021. Decent offer list. Had some interest from Nebraska and Ole Miss. Anytime I see Ole Miss with a quarterback, it immediately makes me perk my ears because for some odd reason, Lane Kiffin knows what to do with quarterbacks. And so far this season, you know, he's had a really great season. Let's just be honest with it. You know, over 1,800 yards passing, 11 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, right at 64% completion. But the crazy part, and you're going to mention it here in just a second, over 500 yards rushing, averaging over 6 a carry, 9 touchdowns on the ground. What are you seeing not only from his passing, but from his legs?
Yeah, we'll start with the first one. He's got great timing with his receivers, which is kind of what has helped them throughout the season. He's not afraid to throw into tight windows, but he does. Those are calculated risks. They're not bad balls or dangerous balls, but they are definitely tight windows. His accuracy is above average, but his footwork in the passing game will occasionally let him down, get into trouble where he's making some bad throws or get some bad balls in there. He feels the rush pretty well, gets the ball down quickly to a check down or one of the quick routes in the set there. But to me, his biggest threat is the ability to rush. Threat to take off, both in zone read game, scramble drill, all that. Had a big run against BC where he showed a little bit of wiggle and ability to finish the run down the sideline. He sometimes, though, he lets that ability to run hurt him because sometimes he'll bail on good pockets just to pick up some positive yards with his legs. So sometimes he'll bail on that, take the 4 or 5 he can get with his legs when there could be more potential there.
All right, that sounds good. Now, something that everybody should know is he is a sophomore, a true sophomore, because at the end of the David Cutcliffe era, starting in mid-October last year, he played significant snaps in every game but one, and that was the last game against Miami. So, essentially, Cutcliffe helps his predecessor by getting a somewhat decent quarterback coming out of college or coming out of high school, you know, live game reps to the tune of he had 62 attempts. He ran the ball over 47 times, so a lot of in-game action really over a course of 5 game periods. Now, Brian. Yeah,
and it showed. I mean, it looks like a guy that can handle the moment right out the gate.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about it because you've already mentioned him running the ball. They've got a dynamic pair of running backs. And let's start with the first here, Jordan Waters, at a Fairmont High School in Fairmont, North Carolina, a three-star, 4 out of 247. You know, not the biggest list as far as getting offers. Obviously, you got some ECU and Wake offers. But what are you seeing from Jordan Waters and what he does in their part of the run game?
Yeah, he's more of their kind of every down back. Really good burst through the hole. He's great at setting up blocks and being patient at the point of attack by letting his blockers get fully engaged before he commits. He's not really a home run threat per se, but he gets quickly from that first to second level to consistently grab you those like 5 to 8 yard chunk yards, occasionally breaking some into that 10 or 15 yard range. And he runs through contact and finishes his runs well. So he usually gets those extra 1 or 2 yards to close things out that you'd like to see from a running back.
Yep, and that really shows in his touchdowns. He's got 8 so far this year, so he's about snatching 1 a game. Right at 5 a carry, 461 total yards. And really this year compared to his last couple games receiving the ball, he has 16 receptions for 100 yards. That's not a huge number, but every time I see that, that tells me they trust him to get out for checkdowns, which yep. We need to keep our eye on with him.
And that's pretty much what he does in the passing game is checkdowns. The guy we're about to talk about is the guy they use a lot more in some design passes to the running back.
Well, let's talk about him. Jaquez Moore out of Suwanee High School in Live Oak, Florida, 3-star coming out in the class of 2021. Duke was his only Power 5 offer, and he's accepted. And, Brian, from what I'm seeing, he's excelled at Duke so far.
Yeah. He's definitely more of the receiving threat at running back than Waters. They like to throw it to him out on the edge, kind of let him operate in space, make some moves, break some tackles. He's also effective in the zone read game, especially when defenses lose contain and he can kind of hit that cutback. That's really his bread and butter. That's where he gets a lot of his big plays. And he is more of a second and third level threat than Waters. So if he kind of gets past that second level of the defense, he's the guy that can break a big one. Whereas Waters is more of a get you the first down, establish the drive, carry you through, whereas Moore can kind of break the big one on you if you let him get past that second level.
Oh, absolutely. And it shows in his yards per carry. I mean, he is almost at 6.8. He's right under 400 yards for the season. And, you know, a couple times when he's received, when he's caught the ball out on those edge, you know, gains of, you know, 23 and a couple there at 15 when they were against Miami. So it's there. They don't look to him too often there. But I think what your point is, they send him out there, which essentially takes away. And when you have a guy like that, it's taking the linebacker out. And why do you think Riley Leonard continuously is busting? Well, if there's one less guy in the box, you've already mentioned he's got the moves, easier for him to take off. Now, let's talk about a former quarterback of Duke. Let's talk about Jordan Moore. Out of Towson, Maryland, Loyola Blakefield, he is a class of 2021. He was a three-star, 87 by 247 standards. You know, had some interest. We did send him an offer along with teams like Wisconsin, West Virginia, Pitt, Maryland. So a decent Power 5 offer list. And that was as a quarterback. Now, I don't know if everybody was looking to convert him, but obviously Duke has decided to convert him. And what are they doing with him so far?
Yeah, they're letting him run a lot of good underneath routes. Really dangerous when they put him in motion on swings. Sometimes they'll run a wheel off of that. Shows really good quickness in the open field, but he's not an elite straight line runner. So a lot of what he does is kind of stretch the defense horizontally and makes them play in space.
All right. And so we kind of sit here and you ask, well, look at his, if you look at his stat line, it's going to confuse you because last year he played in 10 games as a true freshman and he did not have one reception. And he actually had 19 pass attempts last year for 95 yards and a touchdown. But he also ran the ball. He averaged 5 a run. And when you start talking about what you're talking about, Brian, how many times have we seen it in the NFL where there is a smaller quarterback who has those type of, I guess you could say, traits, and they get to the NFL and do it? It looks like Mike Elko went ahead and decided to turn him into one now. And so far this year, you know, receiving-wise, he's putting up really good numbers. 331 yards on 32 receptions with 3 touchdowns. So, I mean, it's really good. It's, to me, it's really good coaching. It's really good identifying what a kid can do.
Yeah. And I mean, he could be that next, like, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type.
Exactly. Conversion. Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about this scheme a little bit, Brian. And it's a scheme of Kevin Johns. And Kevin Johns, longtime D1 coordinator with stops at Texas Tech as the offensive coordinator, Indiana as the offensive coordinator. He was the pass game coordinator at Northwestern. He's been roughly coaching since 2002, where he started right here in Richmond on some of those good early 2002 Dave Clawson teams. What does he like to run? And, you know, what are some of the things we can expect to see on Saturday from this offense?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a smash-mouth spread offense. A lot of 11, 12 personnel. Occasionally they'll work in some 21. Heavy peppering of inside-outside zone read. You'll see counter, some pin-and-pull sweep, some split zone in the running game. In the passing game, they like to stretch you horizontally to set up the vertical throws, which they don't do very often. A lot of those are like kind of pick concepts to screw up their man responsibilities. But watching the BC tape, they went 40 plus offensive plays against BC before I saw the ball go more than 20 yards downfield.
Oh,
so they do not take a lot of vertical shots. Everything is kind of in that 0 to 15 yard range.
Interesting. What about the offensive line? And I know they were a team that went out and got some FCS and some G5 offensive linemen, and it looks like it's actually paying off for them, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they got guys that can run block pretty darn well and pass block good enough for the amount of time that they're asking Leonard to stay in the pocket. A lot of this stuff is coming out so quick. They don't have to be great in pass pro. They just have to be good enough. But they got guys that can run block very well, and they put together an offensive line that is able to keep them on the field a lot.
Yeah.
Because they can run the football.
And three of their five starting offensive linemen that's showing on their depth charts are the transfers. Jack Burns is a guy that came from the Ivy League. Chance Lytle and Andre Harris came from G5. So it kind of just tells you what they did in the portal. And I did misspeak a few weeks ago. Shout out Fish out there. He actually got the right numbers. I don't know what the hell I was staring at. I swear it was more, but it is what it is. I'll say when I'm wrong, not afraid to do that. But it seems like you hit on three offensive linemen in the portal and they're all not horrible. It'll help a team out in a heartbeat.
Well, they're all starters on your team, and they're giving you good snaps. I mean, everybody that they got boosted the areas that they were deficient in.
Well, let's flip it to defense, and let's talk about one of the first guys, and it's probably the best defensive player on their team, and that's Darius Jordan. Darius Jordan transferred from FCS Western Illinois, where he was an All-American safety. And so far this year, he is absolutely tearing it up. 71 tackles, 7 of them for loss. He has 3 sacks. He has an interception. He has a forced fumble. He even has some pass deflections. How did a guy like this not sneak off to the NFL? Because I'm assuming what you're seeing on his tape, he's going somewhere in the first 5 rounds.
He's definitely going to go somewhere. Definitely the best athlete on the defense. Darius Joyner is standout, jump off the tape when you look at it in terms of everybody else on the defense. Great in run support, elite in pursuit. They'll use him all over the field, single high, in the box, blitzing, spill and alley defender. He's better as a deeper kind of mid-zone defender than he is in man. Man coverage is probably his only real deficiency in his game, but I mean, he definitely stands out on tape, and he can make plays in the run game and in the pass game.
Awesome. And again, the guy was at Western Illinois. He originally went to Jacksonville State when he came out of high school, transferred to Western Illinois, and then winds up at Duke and is really showing out this year, which is great for that kid. Let's talk about the defensive line, because there's a few guys here I want to bring up. First, let's talk about the edge guy, Brian. Let's talk about R.J. Oben out of St. Peter's Prep in Jersey City, New Jersey, class of 2019, a 3-star. What's he showing on tape? Because, you know, he's 6'4", 255, so that's the prototypical really good size and length for a college body, probably missing about 15 pounds to make it to the pros, but what's he showing on tape?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big, long defensive end, plays with good technique. And that's kind of the thing we'll talk about with the defense is that everybody plays with good technique on this defense. And I don't know if that's a carryover from the Cutcliffe stuff. I know some of these guys are new to the field.
Yes, they are.
In terms of Joyner, but you know, the guy we're talking about now, plays the run well, holds and shoots the gap well. Wrong arms the puller with good force. He's not an elite pass rusher, but he puts himself consistently in position to make plays in the backfield, whether that's a quarterback pressure, a tackle for loss, or a sack. He's good at providing backside contain and setting the edge when he needs to, and he pursues well and can chase down plays from the backside as well.
Good to know. Good to know. So definitely look for him on some of those outside zone runs that we have seen in the last few weeks. But also, Brian, with what he's done, it's really opened it up for the big guy on the inside, Dwayne Carter. Dwayne Carter, who from Pinkerton, Ohio, a three-star when he came out in 2019 out of Pinkerton Central, was originally thought to be going to Michigan State, but he shunned them. A high three-star in 88 when he came out. Top 20 player in Ohio, was a top 40 defensive tackle. So, you know, at 6'3" and 300-plus pounds right now, you know, that's pretty good size and, you know, pretty good, you know, rating coming out of high school. Has Elko been able to really utilize him in a good way this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's really strong in the gap, plays with good leverage, shows good quickness for a defensive tackle his size. He shoots that gap well. Big effort player, shows really good motor, doesn't give up on plays. He doesn't use his hands as effectively as he could to shed blockers. That's probably really the biggest weakness in his game right now. And he's not an elite pass rusher. He's just average, but he's okay. Really effective, especially in obvious passing situations.
All right. Makes sense. And I'll say just the improvement for him is statistically, like last year, he only had 7.5 tackles for loss. He's already 1.5 plus on that number this year. 4.5 sacks last year. He's already at that number this year with you know, 3 games to go. On pace to probably be slightly above his tackles for last year. But here's where it scares the crap out of me after what we've had happen last week. The guy has had 3 forced fumbles. He's had 3 fumble recoveries, and he included a scoop and score.
Yeah.
As much as we've turned the ball over, I look at that data and I go, oh, shit, that's not good, especially the guy who's consistently doing it because he did it 4 times last year. That's worrisome. That's worrisome.
And that's where he's strong in the gap. He shoots the gap well, so we're sometimes getting into that area where the running back doesn't quite have that full grip on the ball after the handoff or after the mesh. If he's able to penetrate there quick and you know, he's playing right over the center most times, he's usually lined up in a 1 or a 0. We'll talk about that in a second. Sometimes in a 3, but
yeah.
All right. Yeah, he's coming at you.
All right. Let's go real quick. Let's try to wrap this up and before we get to the scheme. Let's talk about 2 guys in the linebacker room. Usually we do 4. We're doing 5 because it's another transfer. We're going to talk about at the end here who's making hay. But let's talk about the kind of the guy there, Shaka Howard, 6'4", 220-pound linebacker, a 3-star when he came out of Mill Creek down in Georgia, one of those good schools down there. And so far this year, and so far just in general in his career, he has been a productive player. This year, 66 tackles, 4.5 for loss. A sack, 6 pass deflections, 2 fumble recoveries. But in his career, over 300 tackles. He has started essentially since his freshman year, over 300 tackles, over 30 tackles for loss, 10.5 sacks, interceptions. I mean, what more can you ask for from like a 86 that comes and plays at Duke's putting up those kind of numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing, you know, we talked about it already, but he is a technically sound player. He tackles well, reads offenses quickly. He's better in coverage, especially zone coverage. He can get a little bit on an island there in man. He sometimes can get washed by a down block, but he's really solid player, really good tackler, and just a guy that is always in the right spot to make a play.
All right. Let's flip over to the other guy who was another transfer, and that is Cam Dillon. Cam Dillon originally attended Columbia in the Ivy League, had no other offers, not even rated by 247, and he's come down to Duke, and this year in sort of a, you'll mention in a second here, Ryan, but kind of a secondary role, 34 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, couple forced fumbles, and he's not playing every snap.
Yeah, he's kind of their spell Mike, but he's also the primary nickel linebacker that they have on the field. They like him as a blitzer. They'll also drop into coverage, usually in a zone responsibility. And he plays a great technique, and he's a very good tackler. He gets guys to the ground, and that's really where his biggest benefit is. He's good at rushing the passer, very good at getting guys to the ground when he's at a spot to make a play.
That is awesome to hear. But again, it's I know we said it 3 or 4 times. It's like every guy they got in the portal, significant contributor. And that's where the portal game can do for you. That if you hit on, in this case, they hit on just about everybody, it can help your team. Brian, let's talk about real quick the defensive scheme. Obviously, this is a lot of Mike Elko in it. It is being ran by Rob Smith. Rob Smith, who last year was the defensive coordinator under Greg Schiano at Rutgers. He had also worked with Elko as an analyst back at A&M. But he had also been a defensive coordinator at Minnesota in 2017 and 2018. Arkansas D coordinator in 2014-16. He also has some NFL experience with the Buccaneers. And again, during Schiano's first tenure, he was his defensive coordinator as well. So a really experienced guy as a DC. And what are you seeing from this defense?
Yeah, this is a 4-2-5. It's a pressure-heavy system. So we're very familiar with this. Team is very sound in technique. Some of that's a carryover from Cutcliffe. Some of that is finding the right scheme fit guys to kind of bring in and shore up the areas that were deficient in the offseason. And the thing that, you know, we've seen some of this with the Hokies as well, but they run that split front, that 505 nickel package that creates some confusion against opposing offensive lines. And they bring probably a little bit more pressure consistently with it than we do at the moment. So,
yeah, well, I feel like every time we've seen it, we're dropping 9. So, I mean, so if to me, it'd be like any pressure is more pressure than what we're doing right now. All right, Brian, let's flip real quick. Because we're pushing almost an hour and a half already. We still got a couple things to talk about. Know the enemy. Let's talk about the Hokies keys. And I keep going back to this, and I'm going to keep going back to it. How we run the ball is going to be where we are in this game. 3.5 was effective enough where we should have probably beaten Georgia Tech. I'm going to be nice and say we miss a field goal. We should have beaten Georgia Tech by a touchdown, not 10 points. But, you know, that's just kind of my feel. And I mean, this is a decent defense. I mean, they're only giving up 23 points a game. So I've got a feeling it might be tough sledding again for the Hokies offense.
Yeah, definitely the run game. And the Hokies definitely have to establish that run game. It doesn't have to be great, but it needs to be effective. And we've talked about it for several weeks now. We've seen it have varying degrees of success. You know, this past week, I think if we'd have held onto the ball a couple extra times, I'd have been more or less happy with the run game. I think we've got a cap of what we can expect from this run game. And as long as it is efficient, meaning getting close to that 4 yards a carry, giving the ability to run any of that play action that we can, or any of that max protect that we can, because we've been effective when we can go max protect on off of play action and hit some of those deep shots. But you can't really set those up very well if you're not somewhat efficient in the running game.
Somewhat efficient. And Duke's defense, run defense, is efficient. They're 21st in the country. They're only giving up 124 yards a game, under 4, 3.7 a carry. So I think, Brian, it might go back to what you said last week. If we hit 3.5 on 35 to 40 carries, that might put us in a good position again to potentially have a chance in this game. I'm going to flip to this next, because this is the one that shocked me looking at defensive stats. A team that's 6-3, I gave you the rush numbers. You know they're giving up under, you know, right at 23 points a game. How good do you think their third down conversions would be?
Pretty good.
Middle of the pack? Middle of the pack. No worse. Somehow, they're bad. 109th in the country. They are giving up almost 43% of third down conversions. I sit here and I'll ask you, would you be happy with 40 on Saturday?
I'd be very happy with 40 since we've been consistently like below 35 most of the year so far. So if we could get 40 or above, that'd be great. That'd put us at least in positions to stay on the field without having to rely on some of those chunk plays on early downs.
That's a biggie right there. And that's the biggie, I think, a lot for this game is going to be the game that the Hokies can win here is a low possession game. I would say a 12 possession total game is how we can win that. And as we talk about those conversions, we talk about our run game, but it's also going to be our run D against that run offense. We mentioned three of the players. We gave you the data. Brian gave you the breakdown on each. This is a team that is a top 25 rushing team. They're getting over 208 yards a game. And as good as Waters and Moore is, I really think, Brian, that Riley Leonard's legs are the key. And when I say the key, I mean more of a key to this being a game that's tight in the fourth quarter or potentially them walking away from us in the third quarter or fourth quarter.
Yeah, you know, when we look at this, we got to make sure that we're not letting Riley Leonard beat us. I think if we can get into those predictable outcomes in the zone read game where the ball is handed to the running back, that's probably a better thing for us. Now, we still got to be good in that backside contain because if we're forcing the mesh and we're forcing the give in the mesh, then there could be some cutback lanes. So we got to make sure that we're not missing tackles, that we're not giving up contain on the backside.
Got it.
But that's going to be a big key for sure.
All right. One last piece that I think is a key is going to be the forcing of turnovers. We obviously did force one, but unfortunately we also surrendered four. But Duke's a top team in the country in turnover margin. They've only turned the ball over six times all year. All year.
Yep.
But a little ray of hope. Little ray of hope. We know they lost to Georgia Tech 23-20. Of their six, they gave up two in that game. And they did not take anything away from Georgia Tech. And if we go back and just look at the Georgia Tech game for us this week, is they were plus three and they beat us by a point. So it's one of those correlations to say if we can just stay away from the turnovers, and I know that's easier said than done, but force them to have one of their bad games because one of their bad games, they lost to one of the worst teams, even though we've lost to that team. So are we worse or not?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, overall, Duke has played much better than we have all year, obviously, but
100%.
Yeah. They lost to a team that we almost beat, that we should have beat if we'd have just taken care of some things there at the end. Does that, you know, how is the locker room reacting to that? Are they saying, yeah, shit, we are almost there? Or are they saying, damn, we let another one get away? What is their mentality?
True. And you hope it's the latter, not the former, because if it's the how do we keep letting these games go away, that's a defeatist mentality. That's the whole, you know, the finishing, the winning. That is not the mentality you need.
All right, Brian. We're almost there. We're a couple plays away from putting these things away. Now let's go make those plays.
Well, I pose this to you, Brian. How many plays do you think we are from the three of our losses being wins? Do you think it's 0 to 5 or 1 to 5?
I think zero to five in at least ODU and Georgia Tech, right at five, maybe just over that against NC State.
Okay. So you're thinking overall we're probably 15 or under plays from being, we do the math, 5-4.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to game prediction.
Now, whether that's encouraging or discouraging to the players, I don't know.
That's all mentality. That's all the play. I mean, you got to have conversations.
But I mean, that's definitely, you know, that's definitely where we are right now. I mean, I think, and if we were 5-4, I think people would feel a whole lot better about this season. So the fact that we're close to that is encouraging, but your record is what your record is.
We're close, but we're far away.
Yeah. Your record is still what your record is. So you got to finish. That's just what it is. You got to finish.
We are who we thought we were. All right. Game prediction time, Brian. I'll go first. Listen, I'm just not feeling it. I think they easily take care of us 31-16. And I don't know if that's them blowing us out early or them finishing us off late. I don't know.
I've got this closer. I've got to score in at least one non-offensive touchdown. I've got Duke hanging on at 31-26.
31-26. All right. Big screener for the week, Brian. I'm going to be doing some traveling, so I won't be able to catch hardly any of the early games. Hokies, what I'll be doing, probably following on my phone and putting earbuds in, at numerous points in time. I'm hoping I'll find a TV. But when I get back, I will be watching the TCU-Texas game day on site. I think purposely the CFP put them at 4 to give it the big feel. You know, if you put them at like 6 and they're like, they're number 6. It's like, well,
no one cares.
No one gives a crap. You're number 4, more people care. TCU is getting 7 points. The over under 65, I think the over hits. I think it's a shootout. And the honest truth is, I don't know who will win the game, but I think because my feel is it's going to be a tight game, it's probably going to be somewhere like 35-38. I'll take TCU and take the points.
What about you? All right. I'm going a little off kilter this week.
Okay.
I'm going down to Louisiana. I'm going to UCF at Tulane.
All right.
All right. Tulane.
Top 25 matchup. That's a big game. It's a big game in the AAC.
Tulane is the 2-point favorite here. Over under on that one is 51.5. I've got Tulane winning and covering, and I'm going to take the under.
Ooh, an under fest. The always scary thing to watch is just watching an under when teams start scoring. Like, stop.
Slow down. We got too much time left. Slow down.
There's still 30 minutes left. Why are we at 35 points already? Gosh. All right. So there you go for our big screeners, our game predictions. Brian, anything breaking in the last hour and 34 minutes since we jumped on?
I'm not seeing anything, buddy.
All righty. Who's winning the game behind us here? Give me a second. Let me just turn around here. Oh, ooh. 21-21. Ball State Toledo, under 9. What's the line in that game? Can you pull that up real quick?
Yeah, let me
I'm just kind of interested here. Like, is there anybody sweating making bets on this? Because obviously this looks like it's been an entertaining game in the Glass Bowl down at Toledo.
Let's see. Toledo was 11-point favorite.
Ooh, what's the over-under?
Let's see. 50.5.
All right. Well, that's some sweaters right there at 42. I mean, you know, if you took Ball State in the points tonight, you're feeling good. So, interesting. All righty. Well, let's close it up, Ryan. That wraps up this episode of the Boundary Corner Podcast, brought to you by Main Street Pharmacy in Blacksburg. I am Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler.
Visit our website, BoundaryCornerVT.com, to listen to all of our episodes. While you're there, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube account and follow us on your favorite podcast source, Spotify, Amazon, Apple Podcast. As always, we let our buddy Jason Long play us in, play us out. Check him out on his new website, JasonLongMusic.com, where it will link you to his music on Apple, Spotify, also his YouTube and Facebook pages, where I think on his Facebook page today he covered some Sturgill Simpson. At least I thought that's what I read.
Always a good decision.
Anyway, we thank you as always for listening through thick and thin, two wins or less or more. And as always, Brian, let's go.
Hokie!